Hey everybody, welcome to This Anthro Life. As always, this is Adam Gamwell.
And this is Ryan Collins.
We're glad to be here with you today. We are brought to you in collaboration with a good number of groups now, but for starters, the American Anthropological Association has been one of our first and strongest supporters and collaborators, and we're excited to keep building with them.
Exactly. The Society for Applied Anthropology. Adam just got to meet up with John Sarmiento and the whole SFAA podcast team. So thank you so much for your enthusiasm. Thank you so much for your collaboration. And we're so looking forward to more things in the future.
Yeah, they're a really great team and it's a lot of fun. I get to meet them at a conference in Santa Fe, New Mexico for the Society for Applied Anthropology, as well as one of our newest collaborators and affiliates is Sapiens. And this is a super awesome online publication that is taking a similar tack in terms of bringing anthropological thinking in writing in exciting ways that are attractive to multiple audiences, can be read by anybody. And I mean, just to give one shout out, they've got a great new piece now that Augustine Fuentes, who's an anthropologist at Notre Dame, just put out. That's a preview from his book. He has a book that's on human creativity and how that made us different. Really cool book. But he put a piece on Sapiens that sort of starts getting into one of the differences that makes humans weird. And that's has to do with actually how we became some of nature's most promiscuous beings and how we take sex to a whole new level than other animals do not. So just a shout out to them and Sapiens. They produce a lot of cool stuff, so we're really excited to be a part of them. So today we are doing a Freethink episode. And if you've never heard of Freethink before, what these are kind of backstage passes into our minds where we talk about what's going on in our lives, speak a little more candidly than we might otherwise on the show, and trying to share with you sort of our experiences of being anthropologists and what it means to, you know, work in the public and try to have a public-facing thing. And so this is a little different. It's more candid. It's kind of off the cuff, not scripted. And we've had a lot of great feedback about these kinds of episodes, so we want to keep making them for you and you know, doing more and more of these because it's fun for us to just kind of talk about what it is to do.
We want to give a shout-out to our listeners because with them, we just hit a milestone. We've now achieved 10,000 subscribers on the website.
Incredible. 10,000 feed subscribers.
And we would not have been able to achieve this milestone without you. And we really want you all to know that we think about you, that we care about all of you, and that we want to continue to grow this tribe together. And 10,000 is really just the beginning.
Mm-hmm. It is. But I mean, thank you so much for joining us and being on the ride for us and supporting. We're going to keep supporting you. You keep supporting us. And let's build this tribe together. You know, social consciousness and building compassion and empathy and communication and dialogue. That's what we're about. And so it's so encouraging for us to see that that y'all are along the ride with us, you know.
Exactly. So with all that said, we're kind of feeling a little bit burned out. And that's exactly what we want to talk about today. Because burnout culture is actually something kind of real. We're all starting to feel it in different capacities. And we're seeing different trends and movements that are working past us to try and make sense of it. And what that means for a modern society.
Totally.
So, without any further, let's dive into burning out. We're feeling a little blah this week, guys. So, we want to talk about burning out. And one of the things that made us think about this is it's actually spring break at Brandeis University. And we have these breaks. We instill them so that students and faculty, everybody can have a time to rest and recharge and get their batteries back, right? But we also take them at a point of time when we're also working the hardest. These breaks are often positioned when we're supposed to be doing work, let alone actually taking rest.
Yeah, it leaves you wondering what is the point of the break if there is no actual break, right? Because Ryan and I both at the same time went to two conferences last week. I was in Santa Fe for the Society for Applied Anthropology, and Ryan was at the Society for American Archaeology.
In Vancouver,
which was cool. Both awesome cities, like really great experiences being there. And so we can talk a little bit about that and riff on those. But then also, yeah, there is this reality that we both came back and were totally brain dead this week. And it has been by no means a lull of activity or hive requirements.
Oh, no. And I think the thing that we should clarify here is though we might be brain dead at the moment, we're also extremely productive and we're so excited about the future right now with prospects for our podcast, with prospects for our research. It's been a great week.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, that's why it's one of the funny things that we were saying, you know, what should we freethink about today? And we said, oh yeah, being brain dead, right? Uh-huh. But then as a reflection of, you know, that the work level in no way goes down, but also like such inspiration is happening that, you know, it's important for us to think and for all of us and our listeners and everybody to, you know, brain drain or being brain dead or being burnt out is real. You know, certainly people that work in academia know this, but really in any field, you know, if you work yourself to the bone or you work too much, then you have diminishing returns on what you can get done, you know?
Absolutely. And we tend to think about this, actually, we tend to internalize this culturally, right? Because it's actually a testament of the American dream, right? To work and work and work and work and advance yourself for the benefit of tomorrow. But sometimes you just work and work and work and work and work and you spin your gears more and more and more and more.
Totally.
So this is something that can be a little bit of a problem. And we also tend to view burnout as sort of a faux pas, right? This is something that we tend to try to avoid. You don't want to burn out. You got to take better care of yourself.
Right.
But
then it's like, well, yeah, how much, you know, what's the mix of taking care of yourself versus the burnout, you know? Mm-hmm. It's funny because, yeah, this idea of the American dream makes me think that, you know, this is actually what Max Weber, the sociologist, wrote about in the Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism, was the development of this idea, you know, that if you are working well, it is, in this case, it was seen as a sign of divine providence that you're in God's favor, and that if you, you know, make money and you have material wealth, that means that God is favoring you, and then if God favors you, then you'll do well. And so it was a sort of reinforcing cycle that was built out of like Calvinist Christianity into different other Protestant groups that were Lutherans, and Benjamin Franklin tacked onto this idea, and like he was much more of a deist versus a Christian, but really interesting idea of like that there's this cycle of favor and wealth that come together, and that this gets built into what now we call the American dream. However, I also have to point out my own personal view that I really liked comedian George Carlin's notion of the American dream, and he says it's called the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. Right.
Well, I think that we can also tie Weber back into a sort of critique of this, that his idea is a very charismatic one, right?
Yeah.
But we should be careful with anything that's too charismatic because it might be enforcing a certain type of power dichotomy over you.
It's too shiny.
Oh, just too good there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, speaking of that too, and you know, in terms of things that are shiny, because this made us think too of the idea of like the slow professor movement that's happening right now, or perhaps the, I think, more weird term of dumb phones.
Right. So we all have our iPhones. We love our iPhones. Adam and I have our iPhones in our hands right now. We just can't get enough of them.
Yeah.
But this is part of the problem because the iPhone might be taking away from our productivity. So dumb phones are sort of becoming a trend where all it does is answer and receive phone calls. Nothing else, nothing more.
Yeah, remember that? I mean, I used to have a phone that just did that. And
we
it
just
was,
called them phones once.
We called them phones back in the day, you know? And now they're these other things. It's funny that... you know, you can actually get apps on your phone too, I think, that like make them more dumb phony, and so they don't do as much or they won't transmit as many kinds of things or sort of put you in phone mode only, you know? Mm-hmm. But there is that idea. I mean, there is psychological evidence that people really don't multitask well. I mean, there's a few people that do, but again, this I think tacks into this idea of the American dream or the hardworking individual, that most people can't do more than one thing once at the same time very well.
Mm-hmm. It's actually requiring us to not just do multiple things at once, but to be jacks of all trades in multiple trades at once.
Yeah. So this is the American dream meets Leonardo da Vinci's Renaissance man, you know, meets burnt out in the 27th.
It makes me think, I'm thinking about cyborgs, right? I'm thinking about the fact that now our bodies are partitioned in multiple ways. This is Anna Singh, if I'm remembering.
She talks about it, but Donna Haraway also talks
Haraway.
A little more
that's
about
who I'm
cyborgs.
That's a little bit more on.
Yeah.
We'll clarify that in the show notes.
Oh, good. Cyborg Manifesto. We'll put it in there for you.
So we have these things that are now giving us biofeedback on a constant basis as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's we have thought about that too. We're excited to do an episode. We're going to have our good pal Ben Gibo back on. He's one of our most long-running guest hosts, to do an episode on the quantified self, because super interested in the idea of jawbones and Apple Watches and this question too of like you know, mixing advertising and what, you know, corporate interests are trying to do and sort of what people want. And there is this, you know, actually yesterday this is a segue to my point. But so yesterday I volunteered with the Boston Hasselfest. And so me and Ben and our friend Harrison Braylauer recorded a podcast that was, again, a nice open riff, but it mixed all these different ideas of technology and moving towards the singularity and AI and changing homes. And Harrison had a great point in terms of, you know, the idea of the smart house as one of these other things where it's, you know, you can use your phone to turn on or turn off lights or make sure your coffee pot's turned off or whatever, you know, start your toast in the morning or something. you know, there's one dream that has the house fully connected and, like, you know, you can modulate it and do it through your phone or your watch or whatever. But then what Harrison pointed out was that most people don't actually want that. And it's not really a very convenient experience. You know, if you're sitting on a couch, is it that hard to get up and hit a light switch, you know, rather than going to, you know, get into an app that's just designed for your lights, another one for your, you know, your kitchen appliances, for example. It just depends. But so there is this idea that it's not necessarily going to be something that people want in the first place, right?
Right. And I guess it gets to another issue that there might not be a one-size-fits-all answer for tech and human experience, right?
Never is, you know. And so if we're trying to think, you know, if we can either, jumping back to the idea of multitasking and what these devices help us do, and again, there is no one-size-fits-all sort of saying, okay, we should all be wearing this or not wearing that, using this device, using that device. But so this question of the quantified self is really important, right? In that, because if we have more data about how we do, how long we sleep, and I use the sleep cycle app I really like, and that, you know, uses monitors for sleep, and it's, I mean, kind of weirdly, creepily stays on, you know, all night and is listening to how you move, so it can tell you if you're asleep or awake. Granted, you can tell yourself that too if you're awake usually, but you know, but it helps monitor that, and so it shows you, like, what, you know, what, how many hours you spend asleep or not asleep or kind of falling asleep. And on top of that, you can put sleep notes in terms of, you know, what you did that day, if you worked out or had a lot of coffee or something, or a stressful day or whatever. And so that way it can then sort of tallies those up over time and says, okay, it seems like this kind of thing, you drank too much coffee this day, then it made you sleep a little worse, or you exercise, that actually is the thing that helps you sleep better. You know, some of it is sort of duh, but the other thing is, like, why do we seek that kind of data when we're trying to understand ourselves? And does that on one level help us be more productive, or would this contribute to burnout also?
Right. And again, like, this is a double-edged sword, because we're talking about things that we forget about because we're so busy now.
Yeah.
So remembering that, hey, exercise might help you sleep better. Oh, right. If you don't have 1,000 cups of coffee a day, you might also sleep better as well.
Yeah.
But we tend to think more about the value of our productivity than we think about the things that are just inherently needed in our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on one level, because they can't be measured, you know, or they typically, they're now sort of becoming able to be measured, but normally they weren't, right?
Mm.
And this is, I think it's a great point about valuing too, you know, and this is, I mean, I've heard super awesome feminist scholars like Sherry Ortner also point this out in terms of why male and female labor have been differentiated and why sexism exists on one level. And part of it is that because domestic labor, that which is done in the home, which is taking care of the family, which in many societies has been traditionally ascribed as a feminine role, doesn't get valued the same way that sort of the more, quote, public-facing work that has been ascribed to masculine identities has been, because you can't necessarily evaluate or put a monetary value to the requirements of domestic upkeep, right? I mean, obviously now you can see in more industrialized and wealthy nations, they may have housekeepers or other things, or daycare. Right. And sort of, again, outsourcing this domestic labor itself, which, again, now is taking on these, you know, new roles and developing itself anyway, in terms of being evaluated, in terms of being questioned in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it really strikes me as something to pay attention to in terms of, you know, what it is when we're trying to say we valuing being well. Right. I know that's kind of an orthogonal or tangential idea, but I think you're right on where it's saying these kind of requirements that we have to be often get tossed by the wayside, and then we get reminded by them. We have an app that comes in and says, oh, BT dubs, you really should be sleeping more or getting more exercise or maybe having a little less coffee, you know, or remember to put your diet in your MyFitnessPal or whatever, right?
Exactly. And I mean, the trends we see on all faucets of life right now change so fast. Just today on Facebook, I was reading about trends on resumes and how Times New Roman might be dead, at least for this year. Next year, maybe not so much.
Who knows?
But at the same end, like, we're seeing fast retail as well. And then retail is also suffering because they can't keep up with the amount of clothing that needs to be produced every single year while also making new things and selling them at a consistent price. So do you take the fast retail to make you look good on the fly? And do you then suffer the consequences of it may not last another few weeks?
Yeah, interesting. And that's I guess a trick too, you know, and because companies themselves are probably trying to save business or dollars on their business by.
Right. But it's counterintuitive because those same companies right now are also losing lots of employees.
Hmm.
So there's a strange structural dynamic that's trying to fit with the cultural trends that doesn't quite fit with the actual lived realities of the workers who are there.
Yeah. And that's a challenge too, you know? I mean, there is that sort of push on some people's perspectives that we're moving towards a post-work world, right? But again, I think that's sort of celebrated by Silicon Valley technologists and people who read Wired. Who don't, you know, are not in any way ever interacting with undocumented immigrants or people working in different countries that don't have this sort of, you know, we're not headed to labor-free places at any time, you know?
No.
You know, there's not going to be robot farms and then, you know, well, you might see a sewing machine that can be done by a robot now, which they do have, which is interesting. That's not going to necessarily get rid of everything else, you know?
Right.
But AI itself is actually a huge topic we should definitely talk about.
Oh, I think there's a lot of great topics coming out of this discussion today. Yeah. But I mean, what we're really seeing here, this issue of burnout, is that culture is being partitioned in so many different capacities.
Mm.
So to follow in suit with our own traditions and how they're transforming, we actually have to do things that are also often counterintuitive, that are often, what do you want to say? I can relate this back to Mary Douglas and how she used to talk about... I'm losing it.
Purity and danger.
Purity and danger.
And boundaries, yeah.
And boundaries. Yeah, so if we can look at those types of things as examples to see how there are often these inherent contradictions within society with the way that culture moves, then we can kind of apply that to how we're looking at this burnout issue right now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's an interesting point, you know. When do we set our boundaries? And in this case, you know, purity and danger was, you know, she had some interesting examples that she drew in like on the Hebrew Torah of the book of Leviticus was one of her examples. But yeah, it's true if we sort of extrapolate that forward to today and say, okay, you know, what do we count as sort of, you know, in this case, dirt is matter out of place. But in this case, it's sort of what is ways of being that are out of place. Uh-huh. You might say these are not quite so good as other kinds. And it is worth reflecting on that. That's actually one of the things that we just love anyway with TAL is that like, we can hop with Mary Douglas or Ruth Benedict or Franz Boas, some of the founding members of anthropology, and you know, even go through today also. I mean, obviously now we have way, way more too many scholars to look at and read about, also contributing to burnout, I think. But it's really kind of cool to be able to hop back to Franz Boas and to Mary Douglas and to Max Weber, who we mentioned, you know. And so some of these pioneering scholars that were just putting these ideas together and also the field itself of anthropology and sociology in this case, that really do give us some incisive and key insights, you know. And yeah, these are some of the reasons that these people inspire us that we've talked about, you know, even on the previous three thing too, of like why some of these original scholars really still today have such resonance, you know. I mean, their work as public anthropologists, but also sort of pioneers of thinking, you know. Do they have burnout? Probably. But there's, you know, something about the, you know, indomitable public spirit of that work that I think still inspires us today, on top of the fact that they have some cool theoretical ideas they came out with also, right? So it's this nice mix of all these pieces.
I think it's going back to our foundations where we find the best application of the toolkit. And that's where we can really try to expand our expertise as anthropological thinkers today.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think we can also share with all of our listeners.
Absolutely, yeah, you know, share the good word. And this is, you know, so, I mean, I think we should probably also talk about our conferences too, because we, you know, this is inspired by the fact that we went to conferences in the first place.
Right.
And yes, so, you know, I went to the Society for Applied Anthropology conference in Santa Fe, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was interesting too, because we go to these conferences now, and we go both as TAL and as independent researchers, right?
Right.
And, you know, one day we're hoping to marry the two, and that would be amazing, and, you know, have an independent research firm that is TAL or something like that, which would be amazing. And, you know, maybe one day we'll, actually not maybe, we'll make it happen. But, you know, that path is not totally clear yet. But, you know, so it's cool to go to both, and, you know, so I would be introduced to people or introduce myself to people as, you know, Adam of this Anthro Life, or also I'm on the gathered research on quinoa. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on, again, who you're talking to. And it's nice to kind of have both, because it both together to me are invigorating because they kind of play off of each other. But then also what's been cool to see is just people are really down with the podcast. They're into it. They're into the idea of podcasting. And so it's fun to sort of be able to offer this semi-new medium to anthropology, right?
Mm-hmm. And for sure, when I was at the SAAs in Vancouver, the same type of things came up, right? You know, oh, we'll talk about ancient Maya cities and the origins of Maya civilization, or we can talk about podcasting and bringing this public message out to the public. And that was actually the thing that got the most attention. Mm. And it's really inspiring to see that people want to continue being a part of these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and conferences themselves, I mean, they're great, you know, because we had a really, really fun showing at AAA, the American Anthropological Association, back in November of last year, of 2016. And so now this has been one, this is our first two conferences of 2017. And, you know, it was, again, really fun to be able to bounce ideas off of different people and meet people that we have spoken to because of the podcast, also because of our research, too. But you're right. It's sort of, you know, people want some sort of freshness, and there is some sort of invigorating spirit that I find in conferences, and I know you do, too.
Of course.
And there's something about that really makes me want to keep going back to them, you know? And part of it is, yeah, you get to see other people's research and see some ideas generated. And actually, what was fun, too, for me is that, so I do my conference presentations now kind of podcasty style, like this, where I have some notes which I may or may not read. Usually a PowerPoint that helps keep me on track a little bit, but then I just speak the idea, you know, I sort of speak through the topic, and all that can be, you know, and I have to learn to time myself if that's the case, you know, like I got weirdly lucky.
Well, I think that we should clarify something about this to our audience who may not be in the academic presentation world, that
excellent point.
It's actually weird in the academic world to present your conference without a paper, just to do a free flow conversation with PowerPoints. So while you might think of this as being a normal type of presentation, which Adam is discussing, it's actually, it's not normal in that type of setting.
Absolutely. It's a great point. You're right. And yeah, all the panel presentations that I went to that were not me, people read their papers, and that is right. It is quite normal. What's interesting too, is that when you told people, you said, oh, by the way, you know, I'm just going to do a sort of a podcasty style or conversational. Right. They're like, oh, well, that's cool. It's way better anyway, because the reading is kind of boring. You know, the people just read their papers. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it has to do with presentation style and how you want to interact with people. But you're right. It is not normal to not read a paper.
No. It's also very difficult to speak all the jargon.
Oh, man.
That, a lot of papers are chock full of. And no offense to those papers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all great and they're all doing great types of research, quality things. But it does get a little bit hard to remember every piece of information if you're going to be talking about, you know, on my end, say, like isotopic analysis of some sort of decay of something.
Yeah.
It's not the easiest. I can't do it right now.
No, yeah, exactly. What's decaying? I don't know. My memory. Yeah. You know, some isotope analysis and my brain's not working. But yeah, I think you're exactly right. You know, and so while it's functional to do that, because we are, you know, you're working through complex ideas, but this is also what TAL is premised on anyway, is, you know, we have show notes for the conversations episodes, but we do not read off of them. You know, if you have to read a quote, sure. But, you know, that's the idea. It's sort of like, if you can't say it, then how are you trying to share it? You know, because if you have to read it, if somebody has to read an idea for it to get across, it's not really going to stick in anybody's head if they're listening to it then, right? Yeah. If you can all read it on a piece of paper and take notes, that's different. But again, it makes me question what presentations or how we can do them better, I suppose. I mean, some of them you can remember because it's cool ideas, or other people have really good writing styles or wonderful delivery. You know, it's all these elements.
Sure.
But, you know, in a general sense, you know, just that conferences themselves are great for this, though, and sort of reflecting on why and how we present our research and getting feedback from other people and in general, just kind of being in the spirit of knowledge generation, you know, and sort of this is a place where people come to build new ideas together.
Exactly. And it's also a place where people come, well, for reunions, in a sense, because each of us as researchers, anthropological workers, we're based out of work with partnerships, with other affiliations, with friends, with people that we've grown to consider family over the years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even the research that each of us produces as individuals is tied to that of so many others. And it's great to get up there and showcase that, like, hey, I know this is me, but this is inspired from you. This is in part what you've also done. And this is a way of just giving back.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and also, of course, you know, we're anthropologists, but it feels like most people enjoy traveling too. And so it's kind of nice just to go somewhere else, get out of your own milieu. And I certainly found this, you know, because we're based in Boston. So it was really nice to go to the American Southwest and Santa Fe. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm from Texas and I've never been to Santa Fe. I've never been to New Mexico before. I mean, until now. And so I finally made it 32 years later. Right. But beautiful place. I mean, amazing. And like, it's a really interesting, you know, mixing of cultural heritage that has, you know, both elements of Native American Pueblo peoples and a bunch of different groups, as well as then elements of Spanish architecture. I mean, what's so interesting to me about Santa Fe itself was that it has a plaza that you see in a lot of Latin American cities, which I didn't expect. And then behind that was a cathedral. And this is what I saw in every city that I was in Peru. You know, they've seen in Mexico that you see in Ecuador. It doesn't matter where you go. And so to see these sort of interesting architectural mixings in this one place. And of course, then also Santa Fe is this interesting crossroads of a lot of well-to-do artists and then a lot of poverty crammed together. It's a very interesting juxtapositional place. But again, so even that, like having sort of this space of difference in which all of it is not what you're used to is a really important thing too for, you know, creative inspiration, renewal perhaps, and also just questioning, you know, what's the norms of where you're from.
Exactly. The same was true of Vancouver. It was impressive to just get off the plane at the airport and to be welcomed by all of this Native American artwork that really went into the architecture of the buildings themselves. And then that's for it to really be something that showcases part of the culture of the city. It really showcased, I think, a good way that cultural diversity can be achieved and should be the goal, I think, of a lot of cities to work in this type of way. So I was really impressed, and it was nice to take a step outside that comfort zone and to go to Canada, but feel like you're still kind of in the U.S., but different enough.
Yeah.
Different enough, especially right now, to feel pretty good.
Yeah. Justin Trudeau is doing some good things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's right on. You know, I guess, you know, that's pretty good for thinking with stuff right now. I mean, well, I just want to, you know, want to give a quick shout out to the SFAA podcast team. I mean, they're doing amazing work, and it was really cool to meet up with them because we've talked a lot over Skype, we've talked over emails, and, you know, and we're, you know, we are partnered with SFAA now. And so it was really cool to actually meet them and hang out. And actually, what was fun is that they, you know, so their podcast project is different from ours in terms of that they record sessions every year, you know, at the SFAA conference. And so people can go in and vote on which sessions they want to have recorded, and so, which is really cool. And so actually conveniently and nicely, but kind of weird, mine was one of the panels that was selected. So I have a podcaster myself being podcasted by other podcasters, which is now available for podcast.
So meta.
So it's super meta. You know, it's as meta as it gets. And we're going to release the episode also through TAL to help co-promote it. In my talk that was on quinoa gastronomy, but yeah, so it was really great to sort of see what they're doing. And what's cool too is this is 2017. They've been doing this for 10 years now. So this is their 10-year anniversary of recording these sessions, which is, that's impressive, right? So I'm really excited to see that they have kept up with it. And, you know, this is through students that work at the University of North Texas. They're the ones that run the podcast project. So it was really cool to hang with them and, you know, put some actual faces to names. And we generated some really cool ideas. And so we, you know, we're not ready to announce those yet. We keep doing this in free think. We always say, okay, well, we got some things coming up. We'll tell you about them when the time is right. But we're telling you that there will be a time that will be right, that we will tell you about these things.
And very soon at that.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the things are coming together, which is cool.
So I think one more thing that we need to give a shout out to right now, a very important thing to talk about. It's a milestone for TAL. We just surpassed 10,000 followers for our website.
10,000.
10,000 subscribers, and we're quickly approaching 11,000. And that's just the past week.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I mean, we are so excited, and, you know, like I don't totally have words for it. It's just to see, like, you know, five digits is an incredible milestone. But then just it's so cool to see that this journey has been built. You know, we really even only started doing metrics on our site in October,
right,
of last year, so 2016, and so we don't quite have 6 months of things of data. However, within that time frame, when we started putting the counter up, and sort of this is our feed subscription counter, which you can see on our website, it's available to the public, it had about 2,000, right? So since October, we've grown fivefold to over 10,000. Again, and right now we just looked, it's you know, 10,930 something. So we're really only, you know, a few numbers away from 11,000. And so to see that number go up so quickly and to be there, like, we're, you know, and we're humbled and in awe, and you know, thank you so much to our listeners and our subscribers for hanging out with us and, like, helping us do this and inspiring us to say that people want to hear about this, and, you know, we want to share these stories.
We just really want to give a thanks to all of you out there as you continue on this journey with us and as we continue to build the tribe.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we're going nowhere, you know. I mean, well, that's not in a bad way, in a good way, we hope. We're going to be sticking around.
Right behind the microphone.
Yeah, we're still behind the microphone with you. And so, you know, we do have a lot of changes coming up, you know, in over this year, 2017, and certainly in 2018. And so we are excited to keep building TAL with you guys. And
new partnerships and affiliations. This network is going to continue to grow. And again, stay tuned, because great things are going to keep coming.
Yeah. Hope to see you guys soon. Another one more small shout out is that with Twitter too, we actually just hit over 4,000 followers.
Right.
So, and we assume you're not all the same people. There's some overlap. So it's been crazy to see these numbers go up. And you go, we don't live by the numbers, but we're using them to let us know that, that you guys care. And we're hearing a lot more from you from our What's Your Story page and Twitter, too. So please keep those coming. You know, we're working on...
We're working on giving some shout-outs back to the people who have submitted their stories. And there are a lot of great stories to go through. So we'll be giving out specific shout-outs on the episodes that come up that reference those individuals and their stories. And we'll also try to give a personal email back just to say thanks.
Yeah, no doubt. So thanks for listening and hanging with us. We are excited to keep building with you. And, you know, we'll see you for the next 10,000.